This is a debate down in New Bern, Tennessee, 1961, between Brother Guy Woods and Brother Caldwell on the question of offering home.
It's an investigation of divine truth. Discussions concerning religious matters are by no means new. Throughout the entire history of the church, God's people have been beset with controversy. So we should not be surprised that somewhere along the way, such will develop in our time. The very fact that this discussion is being held indicates the differences of view held by the respective speakers. It is evident that both of them cannot be right. It may be that neither of them are right. But when there are differences, it's evident that somebody's wrong. Now, these men are thoroughly equipped and prepared to present their respective views. They are capable and expert in the field of polemics. May I suggest that you leave the debating unto them? Let each one listen attentively to both speakers. Let each one endeavor to have the honesty of heart for which Brother Frost prayed a moment ago. Let us recognize the seriousness of the occasion and listen in view of eternity. Let there be no demonstration to the audience. I have sometimes attended discussions. I've seen people in the audience break forth in demonstrations, and all such detracts from the sacredness of the occasion which has called us together. Let us conduct ourselves as Christian men and women should. Tomorrow evening and Wednesday evening is as follows. It is contrary to the scriptures for churches of Christ to build and maintain benevolent organizations for the care of the needy, such as Bowles Home, Tipton Home, Tennessee Orphan Home, Child Haven, and other orphan homes and homes for the aged that are among us. Brother Roy E. Cogdill of Oklahoma City is affirming that proposition. Brother Guy N. Woods of Memphis, Tennessee is denying. The second proposition of this debate, which will be discussed Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings, is it is in harmony with the scriptures for churches of Christ to contribute funds from their treasuries in support of the Herald of Truth radio program conducted by the Highland Church of Christ, Abilene, Texas, as a means of cooperating in accomplishing the mission of the Church of the Lord. Brother Guy N. Woods affirms that proposition. Brother Roy E. Cogdill denies it. The order of procedure will be as follows. The affirmative will speak first for a period of 30 minutes, then be followed by the negative for a period of 30 minutes. The affirmative will again speak for 30 minutes, and again will be followed by the negative. You have heard the reading of the proposition. These gentlemen need no introduction to most of you. They are both well known and are respected as students of the Word of God. And for that reason, it's not important that I endeavor to say more concerning them. Listen to what they have to say. Study with an unbiased heart and a prayer to God that you may learn truth. And now, for the next 30 minutes, Brother Roy E. Cogdill will affirm the first proposition which was read to you.
Brother Woods, ladies and gentlemen, it's a real pleasure to me to have the opportunity to come before you in the affirmation of the proposition that has been read in your hearing this evening, and to be greeted upon this occasion by such a wonderful audience of people who have come evidently out of a very deep interest in your heart and what the Bible teaches concerning that which we shall be discussing tonight. It's a pleasure again to meet Brother Woods. I appreciate more than I can express the confidence that has been expressed in me by the elders of this congregation in inviting me to come and set forth what they believe and I believe to be the truth of God on this question. I do not need to make an extended introductory. For the reason that Brother Puckett has so well expressed my sentiment that I can just say amen to what he's had to say along that line. Our appeal in a debate of this kind ought always to be, and in any other discussion concerning truth, in the field of things spiritual and religious, ought to be the Word of God. In 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 11, Peter said, "If any man speak, let him do it, or let him speak as the oracles of God. If any man minister, let him do it as of the ability which God giveth. That God in all things may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom be praise and dominion forever and ever. Amen." And so our appeal ought to be to the oracles of God. Anything that's taught upon any occasion that is not in harmony with what God has declared, in fact, anything that is taught that God has not declared cannot be truth. Jesus said, "Sanctify them through thy truth, thy word is truth." And so it does not matter what any man may think or say, it does not matter what may be said in this debate on either side. So far as truth is concerned, it can be determined only by what the Word of God teaches. And earnestly I shall be hoping and praying, as I call to your attention the things that I shall deal with and the speeches that I shall deliver during this entire week, that your attitude will be to study the Bible for yourself and let your own decision depend upon what you find taught in the Word of God in language clear and plain enough that you can understand it. The terms of the proposition, we want first of all to suggest or set forth as clearly as we may in order that we might understand exactly what is involved. In the first place, the expression contrary to the Scriptures simply means out of harmony with the teaching of the Scriptures, that it is in violation of the principles of righteousness, that it therefore is not the will of God as the Scriptures, the Word of God, sets the will of God forth. In the next place, the churches of Christ. We use this expression in the proposition as Paul employed the term in Romans chapter 16, when writing to the brethren at Rome, he said, "The churches of Christ salute you." We simply mean by churches of Christ, congregations of God's people. This suggests to us that we are not discussing what individual Christians as such can or cannot do. We're talking about what churches of Christ can build and maintain. It suggests in the next place that we're not discussing the right of other organizations to do anything, that is, within themselves. But we are discussing what the churches of Christ can build and maintain. So we're concerned with what churches of Christ can do. In the third place, the expression in the proposition to build and maintain simply means to organize, establish. to bring into existence, to perpetuate, sustain their order and activity, supply the means of their existence. We're not discussing the matter of buying services from business establishments, but we are discussing whether or not churches of Christ can build and maintain benevolent organizations. That is, organizations for the purpose of doing a benevolent work. In the next place, the expression in the proposition, benevolent organizations for the care of the needy, needs to be thoroughly understood and fixed in our minds. We're not discussing caring for the needy or the necessity of it or the obligation to do so. That isn't what the proposition is about. That isn't the issue. We are not discussing in this debate, and shall not be so far as I am concerned, the proposition of for whom the church may care. That isn't in the proposition. We are not discussing in this debate the matter of means or methods that may be used in caring for the needy by the churches of Christ. Nor are we discussing mere systematic arrangements. But the proposition calls for a discussion of benevolent organizations that are built and maintained by the churches of Christ. These benevolent organizations are further identified by the expressions such as Bowles Home, Tipton Home, and Tennessee Orphan Home, and Childhood, and other such homes for the aged and for the caring of destitute children as are among us. What kind of organizations are these benevolent organizations about which this proposition is concerned? If we fail to deal with that, then we shall fail to discuss the proposition which we've signed to debate. And that's the pivotal point of the whole thing. What kind of organizations are these benevolent organizations that we're talking about? And we have a chart that we want to get before you in the very beginning of our discussion tonight, so that we may be able to set forth exactly the center of this proposition and what it's about. On this chart, we have three divisions. We have the church over here. We have the home over there. And in the center, the benevolent organization with which the proposition is concerned. We want a comparison of them in four different points. First of all, in the origin. The church, of course, is divine in its origin, authorized by Christ, regulated by the Scriptures. Its nature, universally, is a relationship, a spiritual relationship. Locally, it is an organic body, an organization, the congregation. In form, Christ is the head of it, the universal head of it, and the only head from the viewpoint of authority that it has, or any other point of view. It is ruled by elders under his authority. It is served by deacons, and it is composed of saints. In Philippians 1:1, the Apostle Paul wrote, unto all the saints which are at Philippi, with the bishops, and that's the elders, and the deacons. So you have the form of the organization of the church. And I might stop long enough to remark at this point that this organization is the only one that God ever gave the church. It's the only one that he ever gave it to do anything or to carry on any work that he has assigned to it. This is a divine pattern for the organization of the church. The function of this divine relationship or of this divine organization is, of course, spiritual, and in its spiritual function is included evangelism, edification, and ministry, as the Apostle Paul sets it forth in Ephesians 4:11-12, when he said that he gave some to be apostles and some prophets, some evangelists and pastors and teachers for the perfecting of the saints, under the work of ministering, under the building up of the body of Christ. And those three things are included as the mission of the church. Evangelism, and the work of ministry, which would include benevolence, and the work of edification. This is the purpose for which God set this divine organization into existence, or brought it into existence. On the other hand here, we have the home. Its origin is a relationship that is ordained of God. It is entered by the institution of marriage, or by birth, and by adoption. It is ruled by righteousness. That is, the will of God governs all Christians in this relationship. In nature, it is a place of residence, or a domestic or family relationship. In form, it consists of husband and wife relationship, parent and child relationship, and the husband of a father is the head of. God so ordained when he created Eve out of a rib taken from Adam's side and gave her to him as his wife, and the two became one flesh, and he commanded them to multiply and replenish the earth. In 1 Corinthians 11 and 3, we have again the fact that man is the head of the woman. Christ is the head of the man. So the father, or the head of the family, the husband, is the form of its organization, or the relationship. Then we have the function of it, is to teach and train, to provide for. 1 Timothy 5 and 8, Paul said, if a man does not provide for his own household, he's worse than an infidel, and to discipline, and then to create an estate for the children that they're to be the heirs of. And of course, you could have added to that the function that God gave the family relationship of procreation. That is, to multiply and to populate the earth. Now, in the center we have, and I hope all of you can see the chart, in the center we have the origin of these benevolent institutions or organizations. They originated by human authority. They're human in design. They're the products of the will and the wisdom of man. There isn't an office in any one of them, as we shall see, that is ordained of God, or that is specified and authorized in the Scriptures. As far as the form of organization is concerned, it's the product of human will and wisdom. It is chartered by the state, given the right to exist by state law, and regulated by state statute. That is, all of them are chartered institutions that I know anything about, except the one at Lubbock, Texas. And it operates under the eldership. The congregation, the church there, happens to be a chartered institution, but the home itself is not a separate chartered organization from the church. It operates under the church. The nature of these benevolent organizations is, in organization, they are a body politic. More than that, they are a legal entity. That is, they have their own existence and their own identification, separate and apart from everything else on earth. They enjoy, as chartered institutions, the rights of an individual, and are not a part of anything as such legally. They cannot be. In form, they have a board of directors to rule over, a president, a vice president, the secretary, and the treasurer, unless the latter two are combined, as sometimes they are. This is the form of their organization. In function, they are to provide a home, to operate a home, and they're no part of the function of the home as such. Now, this is what we're talking about. This is the organization that we're concerned with. You can see that in origin, in nature, in form, and in function, it is neither the church, nor is it the home. It isn't the home in origin. It is not, this organization is not divine in its origin. It is not divine in its nature. It is not divine in its form. It is not divine in its function. It is simply something that is distinct and apart from both the home on the one hand and any sense in which the home can be used. The term home denotes, first of all, a place of residence or habitation. Then it denotes the family relationship. This organization is neither. It isn't a place, nor is it a family. The board of directors with the president, a vice president, and the secretary and treasury is not the family relationship in form, nor is it the home of the place of residence. It is neither the place of residence or the relationship that constitutes a home, and hence is not a home in any sense of the word. When we try to fasten this onto the home, we simply make the home include more than God ever intended for it to include. When we try to fasten it upon the church, we do exactly the same thing. It is not this, and it is not this. Now help me, Brother Wilson, and let's get the next chart that we want. Here you have another chart that sets forth this same benevolent organization. And here, our purpose in the chart is to separate it from the work that it has been created to perform or to do. Over here, you have the churches supporting it, building and maintaining it by the money that they furnish. These benevolent organizations, for the most part, some of them may get independently wealthy one of these days and get to where they won't have to depend upon the churches for their existence, but so far, they have to depend upon the churches for their existence. It is a centralized agency through which the churches work to do the work of relieving in this instance. But the same thing has been created in order that churches might do the work of evangelism. The Missionary Society, of course, by our brethren who are in the Christian church movement, was created as a centralized agency for the purpose of doing this work. Then there are those who would create a school for the work of edification and make the organization a centralized agency, the means by which the churches carry on their work of edification. There is also a good deal of sentiment in the case of denominations and sectarians. There is the centralized agency that creates the work of hospitalization, the work of surgical and medical care. And then there is the centralized agency that we're talking about in this debate that does the work of relief. Now, in neither instance is this organization the work. It isn't the work of evangelism. It does the work of evangelism, manages it, and directs it. It is not the work of edification, but it carries on the work of edification. The organization is not the work of hospitalizing, of surgical and medical care, but it carries on that work. And it is not the organization that does the work of relief. It provides the place and superintends and directs and controls the work of relief. So let's look at the conclusion on the chart. The organization is not the work. The organization, number two, uses means and methods. It provides, and in the case of these benevolent organizations, the charter of every one of them that I've ever seen or know anything about says that they exist for the purpose of providing a home. They're not the home. They use means and methods to provide a home. And I want you to know that it isn't the means and the methods nor the provision of the home that I'm opposing. I'm not opposed to the work of relieving the people that are destitute and that need care. That isn't the purpose for which I'm on this platform. It shall not be any of the three nights. But I am opposed to the churches of Christ building and maintaining an organization through which as a centralized agency to carry on the work of relieving the destitute for which the church is responsible. And we come to another chart this time to set this forth in all the clarity that we know how, and that is that, let's turn this one over and get number two. You don't have that. I want the one, what is the issue, Brother Wilson?
All right.
I think it's chart number two. I'll turn back. The issue is not the work that is to be done. It isn't the things that are necessary in providing for the care of the destitute. Go right on back to number two.
But the issue is what organization will do this work of providing. Can the church make its own provision over another 1 year in front of that? Can the church make its own provision for a place, for the necessary or the essential things? Get it in a moment. And can the church provide for those to care? One more. That's what we want. Number two. Can the church provide the things necessary in the work to be done? Now here we are, the work of relieving the destitute. Necessary in it, a place for shelter, the necessities of life, food and clothing, medicine or whatever might be necessary. Necessities are in the realm of benevolence. Number three, personnel for supervision and care in case the destitute are unable to care for themselves. These things are essential in doing the work, and I might add, they're essential in doing any of the work of the church. They're essential in doing the work of evangelizing. They're essential in doing the work of edification. You can't carry on the work of the church without a place, without the things necessary, the facilities necessary to do the work, and without personnel to actually perform the service that is to be performed. Now the question is, which organization are we going to have do that work? It isn't the work that is being opposed, but here is a divine organization which God commanded to relieve the widow that's a widow indeed, 1 Timothy 5:16. God said in 1 Timothy 5:16, if any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them, and let not the church be charged. That it, the church, and an organization, that's what the church is. That it, the church, may relieve them that are widows indeed. So the church is commanded to relieve widows indeed. There can't be any question about that obligation from the viewpoint of relieving the destitute. Well, can the church do it? Can the church provide a place for a widow that's destitute of shelter? Can the church provide a place or provide the necessary things of life, food and clothing, essential, or medicine, or whatever is necessary for the sustenance of life? Can the church, the congregation, God's organization, provide personnel to care for those that are unable to care for themselves? Is it impossible, and would it be wrong for a congregation under its own elders, by the ministration of its own deacons, out of the resources supplied to its treasury by its own members, to relieve its own destitute, whether they need shelter or food and clothing, or whether they need care? Can a congregation do this? Is Brother Wood willing to deny that a congregation, this organization, divine in its origin, existing to the authority of Christ, regulated only by the Scriptures, with elders as its overseers, can provide by the resources furnished by its own members and by the ministration of its own deacons for its own destitute the things that are necessary? It'll be interesting to see whether or not he'll deny that God's organization can do what God has commanded that organization to do. You remember God said for the church to do this, relieve. That's the word that you used, and we want to be interested in that work. Not a word. On the other hand, we've got a corporate body controlled by a board of directors. That's these benevolent organizations that we're opposing in this discussion that have been built by man, that originated with the will and the wisdom of man. And the contention of the negative is that this organization should turn its destitute over to this and turn its money, its resources over to this one, and let this organization take care of the work of relieving the destitute for which God said this one is responsible. I'm not opposing the work being done. I'm not opposing God's organization doing the work that God said for it to do. That's what I'm contending for. Whatever may be necessary, whatever is involved, I believe that God's organization can do it. And I believe that in the New Testament day that it did do it. It carried on the work of relieving the destitute. But we want to get the first argument stated specifically, and that is that such benevolent organizations have been built and maintained by the churches, as they have been built and maintained by the churches of Christ are transgressive for the reason that they're without divine authority. I want number one now. They're without divine authority, and they do not classify even as an aid to the church in carrying on its work. We have this chart simply to illustrate, and we'll cover it briefly, how scriptural authority must be established. Now, if these benevolent organizations that we're talking about in this debate, if they are authorized in the Word of God, and if they aren't, for the church to build and maintain them would be wrong and sinful. If they're authorized in the Word of God, then it must be either by express command or precept, by approved example, a necessary influence. We have it here in the Lord's Supper, this do in remembrance of me. And then we have approved example telling us when to do it, Acts 20 and 7. And we have necessary inference to show us how often it is to be observed, the regularity with which it is to be observed. As a matter of expediency, within the first day of the week, any hour would be expedient or acceptable. In order for a thing to be expedient, it has to be lawful. It must be within the realm of that which is lawfully authorized by the Lord in order to be expedient. And this expediency illustrates the point. That is, any hour within the first day of the week. Now, an hour outside of the first day of the week would not be expedient. It would be unlawful. So we must find, I want chart number three now, brother. If we can get it right that quickly. We must find the authority for the existence of these institutions in the New Testament, either by way of express command, or necessary inference, or approved example. Here you have a generic and a specific distinction made. God told Noah to build an ark. He told him to make it out of wood. That's generic. But God specified gopher, and that eliminated any other kind. He would have disobeyed God if he'd used any other. In the same way, the water of cleansing, the blood of an animal, the ashes of an animal, had to be a red heifer without spot and without blemish. And music had to be singing. It excluded every other kind. Evangelism, here, God specified the organization, the congregation. And Brother Woods wouldn't be willing, even for these benevolent organizations, to do evangelistic work. He doesn't believe in a missionary society. I'll give him credit for that. But why would a missionary society be wrong? Because it's without divine authority. It isn't authorized. That's the thing that is wrong. It isn't the abuse of it that makes it wrong. If it makes it wrong, it has no right to exist. There isn't any authority for it. The same thing exactly is true of an organization to edify instead of the congregation or any other organization to do the work of relieving. God has specified, He has specified the organization that is to do the work that He has assigned to the church to do. Now here you have essentials and expediency. The gospel is essential in teaching. Anything else it can be. You can teach it by class, privately or publicly. Baptize, immersion in water, natural or an artificial pool, is a matter of expediency. The Lord's Supper, the elements, the bread and the fruit of the vine, the first day of the week are essentials, but a table and containers, the hour and the place, are matters of expediency. In the assembly, the first day of the week, and in the relieving that God has commanded the church to do, the congregation is the essential, that's the organization that God said to do it, and the method of the means, the mode, is a matter of expediency. We're not discussing the realm of expediency, we're discussing the realm of those things that are essential. Now we pass on to another and point out to you that just as instrumental music is an addition to what God commands, not an aid. The aids are books, lacks the leader, and so forth. Instrumental music is another kind of music. It's a coordinate with singing. A baptistry is an aid, but sprinkling is another kind of action. And the building, the lights, the seats in the command to assemble are aids, but Saturday would be another day. and preach the gospel by radio or literature, those are aids, but a missionary society is another organization. And relieve the destitute, building a chair, the necessary things of life, but a benevolent society is another organization. And the same thing true with edification. Place, facilities, and teachers, essential, but the Sunday School Society is another organization. We bring that argument to a conclusion with the idea here, generics and coordinates. Here you have the generic, and here you have the specifics and the coordinates. In music, sing and play are coordinates. Sing is authorized, play is not. Over here you have teach, and that's authorized in the local church. It is a coordinate to the missionary society. They're coordinates in the specific under the commandment to teach. Relieve the coordinates of the local church and the benevolent society. The benevolent society is not authorized, the local church is. And in Acts 2, 4, and 6, and we could have added Acts 11 to the chart, the church did, the congregation, out of its own resources, under its own eldership, through the ministration of its own deacons, took care of its own meeting without any sort or kind of a human organization. Is our time gone, or do I have another moment? All right. I call your attention especially to chapter 2 of the book of Acts and Acts 4 and Acts 6. In these instances, you have the need that arose in the very beginning of the church in Jerusalem. They formed no organization, but among their own number selected 7 men by apostolic authority to distribute the benevolence to the needy members. They gave of their own possessions, selling even their lands and their houses in order to provide the resources necessary, and they carried on the work in these instances of taking care of their own destitute. I thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am thankful that in the providence of God that I've been brought safely to this moment and are now privileged to stand before you in the negative of this proposition. I should like to say first of all that I am grateful to Brother Puckett for his very fair and very correct statement of matters, and it was just such a statement as I would have expected from him. He set out the purpose well, the attitude that should characterize us all, and I appreciated it. I regret very much that these tragedies, which was mentioned in the prayer, exist. But I would remind you that up until a few years ago, there would have been no occasion for such. It's very true that a tragedy occurred right here in this community, but only because brethren brought into this community doctrines which formerly were not held. And those doctrines are those which Brother Cogdell tonight attempts to defend. And so he must bear the responsibility of presenting those matters which occasion division in this section. Before I take up his speech, I should like to submit some questions which are designed to pinpoint the issue. Unfortunately, these discussions do not always stay on the issue. And I know of no better way to pinpoint it than simply to raise some questions and to have Brother Cogdell answer them. I have a copy, so he need not write them down. May every obligation the church has be carried to completion without utilizing any other organization or institution. Number 2, may the church take from its treasury funds and A, send them to a group of Christian people, B, who are licensed by the state for such work, C, in order to enable these Christians to provide food, clothing, shelter, medical attention, and all other needs for destitute children and needy aged people. If no, state which item or items from A to C are unscriptural and give passage or passages. Number 3, when the church makes a donation to a needy family, does it discharge its work the work of the family, neither are both. State which? Number four. In view of the fact that the fatherless and the destitute widow must be somewhere when provided for, designate whether they're in a church, in a home, neither are both. Specify which. Number five, and this is the last one. May the church take from its treasury funds to provide orphan children too young to obey the gospel, such items as toys, dolls, bats, balls, checkers, marbles, swings, sand beds, and may it provide for their use television sets, radios, and other similar entertainment items. Now I should like to say that it's my determination in this debate to take up Brother Cogdell's speech item by item, argument by argument, and note particularly his effort to try to justify his proposition. I was surprised that he should say that we're not discussing in this debate for whom the church may care for. I'm amazed at that, because that's the very purpose of this debate. In fact, that's what the proposition says. May the church build organizations, but that's not all. May it build organizations for the purpose of providing for the needy. He says, for whom the church may care for is not involved in this debate. I beg to differ. I think we shall find out that that's the real issue. Before we proceed further, I should like for you to see what our position is in this debate. Then I shall take up his speech, item by item. First of all, let us have chart number one. May I have the lights out, please, at least a portion of them. Now here, friends, is our contention. There are certain needs that orphans must have. These needs consist of shelter, food, clothing, education, supervision, medical care, entertainment, and recreation. There is an obligation upon somebody to provide them. Mark 14:7, the poor you have with you always. Acts 20:35, I've showed you how that by so laboring you ought to support the weak. Bear in mind, please, that was said to elders of the church. And remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said, it is more blessed to give than to receive. Galatians 6:10, do good unto all men, and especially unto them of the household of faith. We're merely suggesting the obligation. Galatians 2:9, remember the poor. James 1:27, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. 1 Timothy 5:16 establishes, as he pointed out, the obligation of the church to a destitute widow. Now somebody sustains these obligations. Let's have chart number 1X, please. I have here the notes that I'm going to present just at this moment. Now I have them on the screen in order that those of you close enough may read them. There is an obligation to the fathers and the widow. We've just seen that. On Galatians 6:10, we have this statement from Brother Fowler Wallace. Helping those in need. The command to do good unto all men, especially unto them who are of the household of faith, Galatians 6:10, makes it the duty of the church to help those in need. I say that not because Brother Wallace said it, but because the Bible says it. But I show that, brethren, in times past, have expressed that view of it. Now this obligation to care for the needy includes the church as such. Take a look next at the needs of a fatherless child. He must be a part of a family arrangement. This may be either natural or legal. There must be a parent-child relationship. This may be in a private home, in a foster home, in an adoptive home, in a legal home. For in Galatians chapter 4, verse 2, Paul recognizes the right of a parent to place a child under the care of others, or at least of others, to be responsible legally for the care of a child. And in Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4, that same parental responsibility is indicated. We're saying that these needs include food, clothing, shelter, supervision, discipline, medical aid and care, education, manual and spiritual training, and of course recreation. Acts 6:1-7 shows an obligation on the part of the Jerusalem church to certain needy people. And in 1 Timothy 5:8, we've seen that if one doesn't discharge this obligation as an individual, he's worse than an infidel. Well, since the individual can't do it, as in the case of the 16th verse, then it becomes the duty of the church to do it. And if it's worse than an infidel for an individual to fail, then would it not be the same for the church to do so in the absence of the individual? That's Paul's argument there. I asked Brother Cogdell, incidentally, to deal with that. It is the obligation of the church to supply funds for these needs, whether the child is in a private home, in a foster home, in an adoptive home, or legal home. Galatians chapter 6, verse 10, 1 Timothy 5:16. When these funds have been supplied to the church, the child still needs family care. Psalm 68:6, the record says that God puts the solitary in families. And I use the word home synonymously with the word family. I call Brother Cogdell's attention to that fact. Chapter 113, verse 9 of Psalms. It maketh the barren woman to live in a house. The church is not a home. That is, it's not a family arrangement. It does not perform the functions of a family. When it has done its work, that is, supplying the funds, all the actual child care must yet be done. Genesis 1, 2, and 3 sets out the origin of the home. Romans 13:1 indicates the responsibility of us all to adhere to the law of the land. Now note, the state takes cognizance of the existence of a home operated for the purpose of meeting the needs of fatherless children and requires that it meet certain standards. It's right to obey the law, Romans 13:6. Paul sets out our obligation so to do. As also, in 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 13. Now then, let us have next our chart number 32. Chart number 32. I might point out to you, friends, that we're pinpointing now the obligation of the church, the work of the home, and the relationship that subsists between the two. Now note here, who is it that has the answer? Notice, please, that the communists say that children are wards of the state. They'd take them out of homes and put them in the custody and care of the state. Notice that Brother Cogdell and the Catholics take the position that children are wards of the church. That is, he did in former discussions. It remains to be seen whether such will characterize him here. But the New Testament teaches that children are wards of the home. That God assigned to the home the responsibilities of child care. Now let's have chart number 33A. Chart number 33A. We're establishing the responsibility. We've seen that there's an obligation. We've seen that the obligation is upon the church. We've seen that the obligation to provide the care is in the home, that the church supports it. Now look, here are divine institutions, the home and the state. and the church. When the state breaks down, the Catholics maintain that the state can take over, the church can take over. So you have a combination of church and state. Brother Cogdell takes the position that when the home breaks down, that the church can operate in that realm and provide every responsibility that formerly existed in the home. I deny that. I say that in spirit, that's Catholicism. If you can have a church home in the sense of the church assuming every responsibility, then why can't you have a church state? I maintain you can. Let's have now chart number 34. Dear friends, it's our contention. Whenever the child's original home falls into need, the church can come to its aid. Sometimes the home is completely lost. If it needed shoes, then the church would provide that which it needed. But sometimes it needs more than shoes. It needs everything. The home is gone. What happens? A new home is established. Now, if the church sustains an obligation to this home, then it has one to this one. If the child has a right to a home to begin with, it has a right to a home to end with. But it has a right to a home to begin with. Therefore, this home here is as much the child's right as your home. And since all homes must operate under state control, then there's no objection that may be offered to the fact that this home is licensed. So is yours. In fact, all homes are established and recognized by the state. Now, that, friends, gets the issue before you. That shows you what we'll be contending for in this debate. We tell you that the home, the orphan home, is not in conflict with the church because it's not doing the work of a church. It's doing the work of a home. It's not in conflict with the home that it replaces because that home is gone. What is the orphan home? It's the home the child had, lost, and has been restored. Now let him deny it. Now I shall take up his speech, item by item. We may turn the lights on, please. I should like, please, first of all, to have his chart, benevolent organizations. And I will need each one of them in the order in which he presented them. So if you'll be ready to turn to them, please.
No.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. I didn't see any numbers on there, actually. Thank you very much. Now let me call your attention to this fact, friends. Brother Cogdell's entire contention on this is that the orphan homes have no right to exist. It is not a question here at all with him as to the manner of how they're supported. He is arguing from this chart that they are evil, that is, that they have no right to exist. Well, why? Because he thinks that they are performing a work that's in conflict with that which God assigned to the church. Now, let me say in reply to that, that we do not contend, and he can't prove, that the orphan homes do the work of a church. I'd be just as much opposed to them as he affects to be, if that were the case, which it is not. They are not performing the work of a church as a church. They're performing a work of a home as a home. Now, does the home have a right to exist? I agree with him that the church is divine. That is authorized by Christ, regulated by the Scriptures. Although, Brother Cogdell, where do the Scriptures regulate the incorporation that's characteristic of a good many of the congregations with which you're in fellowship?
It'll be interesting to get a little information on that. Tell us about that when you come back up here. But at any rate, we agree with reference to the origin of the church. And we also agree, I'm glad to tell you, of the origin of the home. I know some people who do not think that the word home has reference to the family. But we've learned from Mother Cogdill, and I'm glad he's right about it, that the home here is synonymous with the family. God ordained the family. Now then, the question is, does a child have a right to a family relationship that it once lost? I insist that it does. And that the effort to restore it is the next best thing. That is, it is an effort on the part of Christian people to provide a restoration of that family arrangement. For the Cogdill cannot any longer deny that the home is a divine arrangement established by the Lord himself. But now you remember this. He's arguing that this is wrong. I maintain, in the first place, that his objection is without force, because in the first place, I'm going to show you that he's wrong about this, that he himself is inconsistent in it. But I want you to get the issue. His purpose in introducing this is to show that it has no right to exist at all. But now you listen to Brother Cogdill. In his review of the Lufkin debate, this is his booklet, mind you, he says here, with reference to the Gospel Guardian, which of which he is the publisher, it happens, and I'm quoting Brother Cogdill, it happens that recently we secured a charter under the laws of the state which allow us to engage in business as a non-profit corporation. We are incorporated under exactly the same statute as our schools, our orphan homes that operate under a board of directors, and all of our religious publishing houses except those who operate for profit. In organization, we are exactly the same kind of corporation that they are. That is, we have the same kind of corporate existence here today with the same offices and bylaws. Now, if this is wrong because of the organization, then he's wrong. Now, he may come up here and say, we changed it yesterday. Well, maybe so. But this was back there when they were debating Brother Harper out in Lufkin. If they've changed it, then Brother Harper sure taught him a good lesson out there. I'd say that. I don't care whether they've changed it or not. Maybe so, maybe not. At any rate, he said the organization is just exactly like them. Now then, if so, then it's not the organization. He argued here it's the organization. If it is, he says he's just like them. Well, two things are just alike are just alike. And if it's wrong on the basis of organization, then down goes his setup. But it so happens that I have a charter of the Gospel Guardian. Now, remember that I'm in the negative tonight. If he could show 100 things, if there are 100 things wrong with the orphan homes, it's still Brother Cogdill's position to substantiate his position. I'm going to show you tonight that he'll fail miserably. Know all men by these presents that I, Roy E. Cogdill, Fanning 8 or 10, and he mentions others, all citizens of Texas under and by virtue of the laws of this state, do hereby voluntarily associate ourselves for the purpose of forming a private corporation under such laws upon the following terms and consideration. The name of the corporation shall be Gospel Guardian Company Incorporated. The purpose for which it is formed is to support a religious, charitable, literary, and educational undertaking as authorized by Subdivision 105 of Article 1302 of the Texas Revised Civil Statutes. We're even set up to operate as a charitable organization. Well, now, I think he has a perfect right to set up under that basis. I'm not questioning the legal or even scriptural right. But let him make up his mind. Is it wrong because of the organization? That's why he argued. He never said a word now on the basis of church support of it. Let him get back. Let him get to that now. If it's the matter of how it's supported, then it's not the organization. But these fellows go all over the country telling you that it's the organization that's wrong. They're going to make up their minds, and they'll do it in the next speech. You wait and see. Now he says, this is not divine. I have pointed out, and I shall continue to do so,
Now it is our contention that what we are defending is divine. Now it's up to Brother Cogdill to prove that it isn't. He's in the affirmative. Let him do so. Let's have the second chart now. That is the second you introduced. I'm sorry I didn't get... No, I didn't even see them. Yes, this is it here. He says now, here is what's wrong with this setup here. He says this centralized agency provides the work. And he went on down through all of this, making the point on each one of these, that this provides. It isn't the work, but it provides. Now, the very same objection may be offered here. What does it say? Does it say that it is the work of a charitable organization or educational organization here, the Gospel Guardian? No. It doesn't say that. It was set up, look at the statement, the purpose for which it is formed is to support it. It isn't the work itself, it supports it. This platform on which I stand supports me, but I'm not the platform. Now, Brother Cogdill says this is wrong because this supports this. Now, Brother Cogdill, I don't think this looks like a 32nd cousin of what I'm defending here. There isn't any centralized agency. The churches do not send to a centralized agency, and that agency in turn then send to the orphan home to support the orphan home. What do? We send the money from the church directly to the home, just like you would to a needy family out here. And incidentally, what about the needy family? Is it another organization? And when the money is sent to another family, does it usurp the functions of the church for that family to utilize it? Let's have the next chart. All right. Brother Cogdill made the statement in connection with this that it's not whether the work shall be done, but what organization is to do it. Now, that's fine. I agree with that. That's exactly right. He said it's not the question of whether the work shall be done. Beg pardon?
Number two.
At any rate, note this. Not the work to be done, but what is to do it. That is, what organization is to do it. I say that is the issue. Exactly so. Because it's not the function of the church to perform the activities of a home any more than it's the function of a state to perform the activities of a church. And we shall see that pinpoint as we go along. Now, what is the issue? Yes, this is it. Again, Brother Cogdill, where is the scripture that regulates the incorporated church? Where is the scripture that regulates the trusteeship that's characteristic of a building? Now, Brother Cogdill's left the impression that there isn't any field for expediency whatsoever in this matter. And he comes down here and says, now, it's not a question of whether the church can do this, but it's a question of whether or not a corporate body is to do it. I say if you put in the place of corporate body there a home, in the case of a needy private home, you still got the situation. If the home itself is dissolved, then you have the next best thing, a legal home. That's our contention. We're not defending here an organization not divine in character. We're maintaining that God ordained the home. And that it can be restored, just like you can restore a church. The church was restored in modern times. The home, when it breaks down, can be restored. Brother Cogdill, that is our contention. He said, I'd like for you to tell me one thing that the church, that the needy have, that is, the needs of those who are destitute, that there is, what is that the church can't do? Well, I let him tell us. Hand me that walking by faith over there. As the church can't do. He says it's not the business or work of the church to provide and serve as a guide in recreational activity. Church basketball teams, church-sponsored skating parties, swimming parties, facilities for ping-pong games and the like are perversion of the energies and resources of the church. Church then can't do that. He says it's not the business of the church to furnish entertainment. He says it's not the business of the church to make money. The church has no business in business. God gave the pattern for raising the funds God gave the pattern for raising funds to do the work of the church. It should be respected. He cites 1 Corinthians 16:1-2. He said the church is not a court or school of domestic relations. He says a secular education, the teaching of secular subjects such as science, mathematics, history, and literature, does not come within the scope and mission of the work of the church. He says it's not a part of the work of the church to engage in recreation, in education, in business, or in the oversight
to operate a home. In this very book, however, Cogdell, how on earth can you provide for needy children that are tiny infants that are not supplying them with a home? How can you do so without engaging in business? How can you raise them up without rearing them? He says here also, it's not the responsibility of the church to rear children. Well, now how are you going to raise them up without rearing them? On the other hand, let me ask you this. If the church is obligated to perform every obligation here, and that is an obligation, then the church can't do what it's obligated to do. I don't think the church is obligated to do it either. God gave that responsibility to the home. And that's what we're arguing here in this debate. And we'll continue to do so. Let's have now next.
The hope that in this debate we'd be able to get Brother Wood to discuss the proposition. He hasn't debated it yet in any of the debates that he's held. I've listened to all of them, either personally or over the tape, by means of tape, and he evades and devoids in every one of them what the proposition says. Now, if I weren't going to debate the proposition guy, I wouldn't say it. This proposition says churches of Christ to build and maintain benevolent organizations. It doesn't say a word in the world about a home, not one word in the world about it. Either from the viewpoint of place or faith, the home isn't in the proposition, Brother Wood. You read it in there. You either haven't read it or you're not willing to deal with it, one or the other. We're not debating the matter of furnishing anybody a home or supporting a home. That organization is neither a place nor a family. There isn't anything about it that looks like a place or a family. And you know that as well as anybody knows. Why don't you debate the proposition? If you don't like it and don't want to discuss it, why don't you just be honest enough to say so? And let's get us one that you are willing to debate.
May I suggest that we have no amens from the office.
Second suggestion. I think that's fine. They ought to be left off. As a matter of wisdom. In the proposition and lacking ought to be well left off too, as far as I'm concerned. I think it would be well just to leave that out with the amens, if I may say so. The first thing I want to deal with is the questions that he's asked. Brother Woods likes to ask questions, but he likes to make them so ambiguous that you never know exactly what he means. He wants to pinpoint something by questions. And then he raises this: may every obligation the church has be carried to completion without utilizing any other organization or institution. Brother Woods, we're not talking about utilizing other organizations. That's not in the proposition. We're not talking about the church buying services. We're talking about the church building and maintaining organizations. Why don't you stay with the proposition we're discussing? I suppose everybody knows that the church can't have light in the light in the meeting house without paying the light company for it. You've got to buy a service. Anything of that sort. But that's not in this proposition. And that's exactly the way he confuses the issue and muddies the water all the way through. Now, the church doesn't build the light company. It doesn't build it. It doesn't maintain it by contributions. It's not parallel. None of these organizations that are used as service institutions that the church pays, not even the Gospel Guardian Company when it buys literature from it, or the Gospel Advocate Company, that's a service rendered and money paid for, and not a contribution. And Brother Woods, the Gospel Guardian Company isn't in this either, because the church didn't build it, and the church doesn't contribute to it. Not a dime has it ever contributed to it. And don't get up here and tell this audience that it has, because it's not so. Question number two, may the church take from its treasury funds and send them to a group of Christian people? As a group, no. Where do you find the church helping a group as a group in the New Testament? The church helps saints, individual saints, who are licensed by the state for such work. Well, there isn't anything wrong in being licensed by the state for anything. You have to get a license to get married. And sometimes you even have to have a license to do a lot of other things. But we're not discussing the licensing of anything or anybody. You have to obtain a builder's permit to build a building, but you don't have to build an organization to build it. And so let's just discuss what we're talking about, what the proposition has in it. In order to enable these Christians to provide food, clothing, shelter, medical attention, and all other needs for destitute children and needy aged people. It doesn't say anything about how that group's operating, what they're doing, whether they've taken them into their own home and they're in need or what. He doesn't make that clear. State your case if you want an answer to it specifically. What kind of a group, or organized in what way and operating in what fashion? Let's don't be so ambiguous in our terms. And then you notice him when he talks about a home, he shifts gears on you if you don't watch him. One time he talks about a home and he means a place, and the next time he talks about it and he means a family. And he just, whichever suits his convenience. And sometimes he means the place without the family too, a shelter, a house, a place of habitation. And then in the third question, he says, the last part of this one, if no state which item or items from A to C are unscriptural, it'd depend entirely on how the group operated as to whether any of them would be scriptural or not. Three, when the church makes a donation to a needy family, does it discharge its work? Now, he's talked a lot about the church contributing to a family. I want him to find that. A home, private, or any other kind. Where's the scripture, Brother Woods? Produce it for us. Well, get up here and talk about the church doing something of that sort without giving us some kind of an idea about where the Bible gave it authority to contribute to any kind of a home. Not a family, but saints. Not a home, but saints. In view of the fact that the fatherless and the destitute widow must be somewhere when provided for, designate whether they are in a church. Well, now, does he mean building? Don't you see how duplicitous and deceitful he is in that question? You mean in the church building, guy? Is that what you mean? Do you mean a member of the church? What do you mean by the question? You want to tell me?
I mean the New Testament usage of the word church.
Well, the New Testament usage of it is a spiritual relationship. Do you mean a member of the church? Is that the sense in which you said no? That's the sense in which the New Testament uses it. Now, you just don't want to tell us what you mean. In fact, I don't think you know what you mean. Somewhere is a place. The where is a place. Somewhere, when provided for. Designate whether they're in, well, they don't have to be in the church building. But if they don't have shelter, they have to be in a house, guy. And they don't have to have a family. And if the fatherless has to have one, then the destitute would. Brother Wilson, get me on my charts on the home back here. I want this time, we'll be ready for it in just a moment. I want this proposition on, it's 11A. 11A. Then he raises the question, in view of the fact that the fatherless and the destitute widow must be somewhere when provided for, designate whether they're in a church. Well, that's the one I was talking about. Number five, may the church take from its treasury funds to provide orphan children too young to obey the gospel, such items as toys, dolls, balls, bats, checkers, marbles, swings, sand beds, and may it provide for their use television sets, radios, and other similar entertainment? The answer to that's no. I'd be opposed to the church buying a television set for anybody. That isn't benevolence. I'd be opposed to the church buying and providing recreational facilities for anybody, young or old, destitute or otherwise. The church would prostitute the Lord's resources if it took money out of the Lord's treasure to furnish recreation facilities for anybody. They're not the necessary things of life. I know they aren't. I'd live without them when I was growing up, but I didn't have any trouble getting recreation or playing either. And I can't ever remember having a bought toy. My mother was a widow and didn't have the money. Did all she could do to furnish the necessary things of life without buying bats and balls. But I didn't have any trouble playing. These are not necessary things. Now you said the word benevolence talking about the needy. Well, all right, let's deal with the need. You might feel like you need a trip to Bermuda, but that's not a necessary thing. A man might think he needs another automobile, and that doesn't come within the realm of a need from the viewpoint of the necessaries of life. So let's just stay with the needy as we get discerning and quit haggling around about the proposition and for whom the proposition or by whom the proposition is concerned. He said, I said that we're not discussing whom the church can help. Well, we're not discussing whether the church is to provide for one class or for another class, but the needy is certainly the only one for whom anybody can provide benevolence, because benevolence depends upon a need. There isn't any debate about that. There wouldn't be any benevolence without a need, and that's the reason why your recreation facilities are not a matter. The necessary things of life that are needed is not in that field. Then he brings us chart number one, in which he has all of this listed, recreation and entertainment, and says that I said that it was not the work of the church. Well, I still say that. I still say that. And if you want to affirm that the church ought to include in its work and in its mission the proposition of recreation and entertainment, I'll be glad to deny it, guy. And then he goes on to chart number 1X and quotes Foy Wallace on Galatians 6 and 10. Well, I differ with Foy on that, just like I differ with you on it. I don't believe Galatians 6 and 10 is talking about the church, and I'd like for you to pick out the paragraph in it, in the 6th chapter of Galatians, that says anything about the church. And again, he says that a child needs a parent and child relationship. And it ought to be restored. Well, how are you going to restore a parent and child relationship? He says you restore just like you restore the church. Well, if you don't do any better job of restoring the church where you preach than you do restoring a home by these institutions and asylums that you're defending, why, you don't do much to restore the church, I'll tell you that. The church can be restored because the seed has been preserved. And it can be restored in its exact nature. There isn't anything about the church of the Lord Jesus Christ that doesn't exist today exactly like it did in the New Testament day, so far as the nature of the church is concerned. And if we have the seed, it'll grow the same thing now that it grew then. You should have been preaching that for 25 or 30 years. And then he mentions Acts 6 and 1 Timothy 5, 3 and 8 and 1 Timothy 5, 16 and Psalms 113 and 9. None of which have a thing in the world to do. I agree with all of those passages. What do they have to do with about an organization? Just in which one of them now, guys? Just which one of those passages? 1 Timothy 5, 3 and 8, 1 Timothy 5, 16, Psalms 113 and 9, and Romans 13 and 1, and Romans 13 and 6. Just which one of those passages says anything about the church building a benevolent organization? Why, they're not on the point. You talk about discussing the point, you even didn't try. And then he turns to Romans 13 and says we ought to obey the law. Well, if the law conflicts with God's will, do you think we ought to obey it then? Is that what you imply? Is that what you're talking about? If it isn't the will of God for the church to build human benevolent organizations, if that's contrary to God's will and the law says you ought to do it, would you say with Peter that we ought to obey God rather than men? I would. That's exactly what I believe about it. If the law demands it and it's contrary to the law of God, I say obey the law of God rather than the law of the land. You agree with that, Brother Woods? If you do, what is your point? What is your point in Romans 13? And then he comes to chart number 32, communists, and what they believe. And then he says that
Cogdell believes that the children ought to be the wards of the church. I don't believe anything of the kind. Nothing that even begins to look like it might sound that way. You just accuse Cogdell of something that's not so. Now, you ought to take that back. You just ought to take it back because it's just not so. I categorically deny it, Brother Wood. Just categorically deny it. And he wants to get this matter off into the plane of whether or not the church can care for destitute children and children that aren't saints. Now, Brother Woods, if you want to discuss whether or not the church can carry on a general program of benevolence out of its treasure for outsiders, people who are not citizens in the kingdom of God, if that's what you want to debate, sign your name in the affirmative on that kind of a proposition, and I'll be glad to deny it. But that's what I meant when I said that we're not discussing in this proposition for whom the church can care, and I'm not going to debate it under this proposition. Now, we'll start next week on the other one if you want to affirm it. If you want to affirm that the church can help anybody out of its treasury but the saints, if that's what you're after and want to debate, get your name on the proposition. I'll debate that with you, too, but not under this proposition. Now, you're in poor grace to stand up here and try to tell me to get on the subject. Well, I'd be ashamed if I were you. And then he says that the New Testament says that the children ought to be provided for in a home. Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. A home in the sense of a place and in the sense of proper care for them. People to take care of them. That's exactly what the church ought to do. Then in chart 33A, he says what the home ought to do. Chart 33A, he says that the home is, and the state and the church are involved in this matter, and that the state the church can't take the place of the state, and it can't take the place of the home. Nobody on earth is advocating that the church take the place of the home. We're talking about the organization that provides the home, Brother Wood. The organization that provides the home, and you didn't come in to begin to deal with it. In chart number 34, he talks about the child's original home, and it lost that original home and then has a new home. And I want to deal with those matters through two or three charts that I have here. Here we have 1 Timothy 5:16, and we have the sister or the Christian individual relieving their widow. Paul said, if any man or woman that believeth have widows, let them relieve them. And let not the church be charged. This isn't the work of the church. But the church does have a work, that if the church may relieve them that are widows indeed. The church has an obligation. And the obligation is expressed in exactly the same word in both instances. That word occurs in both instances. Whatever the sister is to do, the church is to do and can do. Now, if all the church can do is just furnish the money and hire somebody to do the care, and that's all the sister can do for her widowed mother. She couldn't take care of her herself. She'd have to hire somebody, and in fact, if Brother Wood's contention amounts to anything, if the church has to build an organization to do this, then she would even have to build an organization and support the organization to do this. The same word exactly used. Now, Brother Wood, this passage proves that whatever the individual can do to relieve the widow for whom the individual is responsible, the church can do to relieve the widow for which it's responsible. And I repeat, if all the church can do, according to your contention, furnish the money and build an organization and turn her widow over to it, then that's exactly all that this one can do. That's exactly all that it can do. They are to be relieved in distress, in the streets of want or need. And Fair, on page 229, and Arden Gingrich on page 283, tell us that this is the same, this is what the word means, to aid, to give assistance, to relieve. And God said for the church to do it. Brother Wilson, let's have the next one. We all pen for it here in order to see if we can get Brother Woods on the subject. We want to pinpoint the proposition of what is the home. How does the Bible use the term home in a house? And from a compilation of the words that are translated or used to translate home, we have four meanings. And I've got all the references if we need them. We have them. And the word home is used, first of all, to designate a dwelling, a room in a dwelling, a place of one's physical abode, a place of habitation.
That's the first definition, and the primary one in the New Testament. The word family, or the word home, is used to designate a family, one's kindred or related by blood, blood relatives. Blood relatives. And the word home in the Bible is used to designate the household, those belonging to a person, including relatives and domestic servants pertaining to his house or his dwelling. The fourth sense in which the word home is used is to designate the property, the wealth, and the goods and the possessions, the family estate. Now, these are the only four senses in which the word home is used in the Bible. This is the way the Bible uses the term home. Now then, what does Brother Wood mean when he says that in order for the widow to be provided for, a home is necessarily involved? What do you mean? Do you mean first a house? If that's all that the sister is providing here in the home that he says is necessarily involved, then that's what the church would have to do, because the same words used as we showed to the other church. If he means by providing the widow a home, and he says that's necessarily involved in 1 Timothy 5:16, then does he mean a family relationship? Then the sister would have to find her widowed mother a husband. And if that's what she would have to do, then the church would be under obligation to go into a sort of a lonely hearts club kind of business and find a husband for the widow that the church is obligated for. If not, why not? The same term is used exactly. And then if the sister over here provides a home in the sense of a household, then in addition to a family for the widow, the church would have to provide servants too, because that's what the word means, Brother Wood says. It necessarily involves a home. Well, if a home means property, a family estate, then the church would have to do that. Now, how does he use the term home? Let him get up here and tell us. Let's deal with the issue. Let's deal with it. Let's discuss the proposition. If the home means setting up an organization to provide a home, then if that's what the church must do, that's what the widow has to do. And if all the church can do is furnish the money to find the home for in either instance, then that's all the sister can do. It'd work just as well for one or the other. Then he talks about the church functioning as a home and the home functioning as a church. And his idea is that it's the business of the church to raise the money and the business of this institutional home, this organization that we're discussing, it's the business of that institution to provide the care and the place. And he says that if the church provides the care, then the church is operating as a home. Well, then if the home provides the money, the home would be operating as a church, wouldn't it, Jack? It worked just well one way or the other. Sauce for the goose and the gander both at the same time. If all the church can do is provide the money and the home, and he means the institutional home, that's what he's talking about by that implication. And that's what this proposition is about. And if it doesn't mean that, he isn't discussing the proposition. And if it means these institutional homes, these benevolent organizations, on our proposition, then all they can do is furnish the care, and if they furnish the money, that'd make a church out of them. Who's trying to get the home to operate as a church? All right. I want to get to another one over here. Help me turn this one, brother. Now, Brother Wood's position is that the child's original home was lost and that home needs to be restored. He has it a new home this time. Usually it's a restored home. I suppose that's the same in his vocabulary. And he says that in these institutional homes, that they are in the place of parents, that is, the board of directors, and that's what the charters say, in loco parentis. They're in the place of parents. And he puts James 1:27 and 1 Timothy 5:16 together to get the child and the widow together. And he says that the child and the widow both are in James 1, and the widow's in 1 Timothy 5, and when you put them together, you've got the child and the widow both. Forming the church has to care. Well, now, if that's so, since the church is to care for both the child and the widow, then it would be just as much under obligation to restore the widow's original home as it is to restore the original home of the child. If not, why not, guys? Now, come on up like a little man and deal with it. Don't get up here double talkers. Just deal with the thing. Don't tell us you are, but do it. That's the thing to do. And if they are in loco parentis, then the church would be under obligation to furnish in loco conia.
in the marriage relationship. So we're going to turn the church into a lonely hearts club after all, aren't we? You know, the most ridiculous statement that he makes, and he'll make it all through this debate, is that this isn't a question of authority. You know, he just agreed with everything that we had on authority. Let's get back to that chart that we have on the... No, not number one. I want the one on the... I'll get the number of it in a minute. I want the one on coordinates, Brother Wilson. He says, but it isn't a question of authority that he agrees with me on authority. Well, now, let's just see if he does. Let's just see if he does. Does he agree that God's specification of an organization through which the church is to work excludes every other organization? I'll hand your question back to you, guy. We'll just hand your question back to you.
I believe it's 5A.
You'll find it in a minute. I'll talk while you find it. If it isn't a question of authority, then why would anything be a question of authority concerning what the church can do? The proposition says that it's contrary to scriptures for the churches of Christ to build and maintain benevolent organizations. Is what the church can build and maintain a question of authority? Now, brethren, I think I have yet to witness a more ridiculous statement than that coming from a man who professes to be a preacher of the gospel. You look at it. What the church can build and maintain is not a matter of authority. Authority isn't involved in it. Well, if it isn't, I want you to tell us why the church can't build and maintain a missionary society. If what the church can build and maintain is not a matter of authority, then why couldn't the church build and maintain a missionary society? I contend that it can on the same basis that it can preach. The church cannot use praying. Why? Because it is accordant with seeing and God specified seeing. God specified seeing. The church cannot use a missionary society. Why? Because it's accordant with the congregation, God's organization, and God specified the organization that's to do the teaching. He won't deny that. But he comes right over here and says, there isn't a question over here of authority at all. What the church can build and maintain over here in the way of an organization is not a matter of authority, whatever. Well, why isn't it a matter of authority? Your benevolent organization over here is a coordinate with the church. Why, of course it is. He says relief is generic, of course. But what are the specifics of relief, guy, when it comes to organization? What are the specifics of relief? We're discussing organizations now, remember, and I'm not going to let you forget it. And we've got two more nights. This is one. We've got two more nights to discuss this proposition. And we're discussing organizations. That's what our proposition calls for. Benevolent organizations. And benevolent organizations are not a place, and benevolent organizations are not a home. In the sense of a family. Who on earth ever heard tell of a family with a president, a vice president, and a secretary of state?
Well, you can even know more about a family than that, guy.
That isn't a family in form, nor is it a family in function, nor is it one in origin. Do you mean that the matter of a corporate organization or any other kind of an organization outside of the family and the church, which God authorized, God didn't even prescribe the form of civil government. No, sir. He didn't say whether it be a monarchy or a democracy. The form of civil government is not divine in its origin. Certainly not. The only forms of any kind of an organization that God prescribed is the family and the church. And he's got the audacity to get up here and tell an audience of thinking people that these benevolent organizations with a board of directors chartered in the state, regulated by state law, not by the New Testament scriptures, like the church is, or the home, but regulated by state law. Now, there isn't anybody that says that incorporating a thing's wrong, and I want my chart, John, on which controls which. Let's look at the kind of a corporation. He'd confuse you about that. And it's number 9. Find it for me.
To incorporate a business is not wrong, and the Gospel Guardian Company is a business. Why he would confuse you with reference to that, his idea is that the Gospel Guardian paper and the Gospel Guardian Company are one and the same. It isn't so. The Gospel Guardian Company is a business organization. And he doesn't seem to know what a non-profit organization is. That doesn't mean you can't charge. And that doesn't mean, guy, that you can't make money. That means that it's not an organization from which profit can be taken by anybody except in the form of salaries. That's what a non-profit organization is. Abilene Christian College is a non-profit organization. And you know, you ought to know, that in the state of Texas until just very recently, when you incorporate anything of an organization under Texas law, you have to do it in the terms of the statute. The law requires that. And that's the reason for the wording of the purpose of that corporation. And you can't make any play on that. We put in there what we had to put in it, just like Bull's Orphan Home did when they incorporated, and just like Abilene Christian College did when they incorporated. That doesn't mean we're engaging in any benevolent activity as a business. That doesn't mean that, and we aren't. We aren't giving away anything. You're getting the paper, somebody's paying for it. And you buy a book, and somebody will have to pay for it. We couldn't operate without it. A non-profit organization doesn't mean you can't charge for your service. It doesn't even mean you can't make money. It means the money's got to stay in the business. That's what it means. So let's not confuse the folks about that. Now, here you have two different kinds of corporation. He talks about an incorporated church. Well, an incorporated church is just exactly like a church with trustees. No, that isn't a spiritual function. It has no spiritual function. And you know what? The law prescribes that that kind of a corporation cannot have any spiritual function in the state of Texas. The law forbids a corporate church body to perform any kind of a spiritual function in the state of Texas. And I've got the law on that if you want it. And it would be entirely wrong to form a corporation and give it any control over the affairs of the congregation. But here's the corporate body, and it runs the orphan home entirely. That orphan institution's run entirely by it. It doesn't just hold title to property like trustees. He says they send the money direct to the home. This body's responsible for the receipt of the money and for the disbursement of it. They have to appoint who shall receive it and who shall not receive it. That's a matter required by law, so don't let him deceive you on that. There is an intermediate body. And that intermediate body, just like we showed you on our chart, is not a home and it is not the church. I want that chart again showing the difference. Here it is. You can turn it. The difference in the two. One of them divine, the other human. They differ in organization and in function, as well as in origin. Here we are, and he didn't commence to try to deal with it. Rather, in all honesty, this is not that, and it isn't this. And I think you can see it.
Brethren moderators, Brother Cardinal, ladies and gentlemen, we're now before you for the final speech of the evening, and I hope that the time passes rapidly and pleasantly for you. He says now in the first place that Brother Woods will not debate the proposition. I maintain that I'm exactly on the proposition. The proposition is, do homes, organizations, apart from the church, set up, legalized with the state, operating under a license, have a right to receive money from churches to care for destitute people, including children? That's what I thought the debate was about. Or he says, you won't talk about build and maintain. Brother Cogdell, may I recommend that you look up the word build? Just look it up in the dictionary. We talk about the church building a house. We don't quibble over the fact that they don't meet on Sunday morning in corporate body and start swinging hammers.
We understand that the word build is used in a figurative sense. It's used in the sense of support. A man builds a house for his family, yet he may put it in the hands of a contractor. May not do a bit of work on it himself. But he provides the money with which it's done. That's what we're talking about. He knew that. But he has to have something to talk about up here. And this time passes slowly with Brother Cogdill at times. You'll find that out as we go along. He said he didn't like the way that I was doing it. Well, I knew he wouldn't like that. I felt sure that he wouldn't like my way of doing it. But he'll have to put up with it for the next few days, to say the least of it. Now then, friends, I long ago found out that the way a person answers questions will indicate whether he's anxious to get to the issue or not. I asked several questions here that Brother Cogdill passed over. That is, several points he made no effort to reply to. I can't force him to answer these questions. The opinion of this audience will be the only factor involved. But I want you to know it now. I ask him this question. In view of the fact that the fatherless and the destitute widow must be somewhere when provided for, designate where they are. In a church? In a home? Neither or both. And we find out where they are? He said, "Oh, Brother Woods, you're confused about what the church is." Well, Brother Woods is not confused about anything. He's asking Cogdill to answer the question. Why didn't he answer that? Now, it'd have been nice if he'd answered the question, however confused Woods may be about it. I mean by the word church exactly what the New Testament means by it. I want to know whether they're part of the church, the local congregation. He said, "You mean the building? Does the word church in the Bible ever refer to the building?" Now, Brother Cogdill knew better than that. But he had to have something to say about it. We talk a lot about the who and the how. I was trying to find out the where. Are they in a church? In a home? In both? Or in neither? We didn't find out, did we? No, we won't tomorrow night either. I then ask him, "May the church take from its treasury funds and send them to a group of Christian people?" He said, "No, you can't find in the Bible where funds were ever sent to a group." Well, I had the idea that in Acts 11 and 27 to 30, where the church or brethren in Antioch sent relief to the brethren in Judea, I had an idea they sent it to a group of people down there. That falls into the category of a group, it seems to me. I thought that when the churches of Galatia and Macedonia and Corinth and so on sent the bounty to Jerusalem, they sent it to a group of people. He said, "You don't read anything about that. Does it mean the phraseology?" Oh, why quibble over such? He said, "Now, yes," he said, "I don't object to people being licensed." Why, there's no objection to being licensed? But now listen, you don't have to license a church to operate. We produced a part of an activity here that he admits can be licensed properly. You don't have to license a church. You can operate and then start performing benevolent activity, and you have to have a license. That which you license is not the church. Brother Cogdill, you didn't answer that. He said, just whether the church can supply every need, utilize itself for every need without any other organization. So that's not in the proposition. Now, brethren, if it isn't, I don't know what the proposition is. I'm arguing that it takes another institution to perform all the responsibilities of child care, and that's the home. Now, that's another institution. Brother Cogdill said that's not involved in this proposition. I maintain that it is. And he turned right around and said, "Well, now, we're not objecting to the idea or not discussing the matter of buying service. Of course the church can buy service." Buy service from another organization? And yet it's all sufficient for every task and every responsibility it has? When it buys that service, whose work is it buying? Its own or the organization whose service it buys? If it's own, then why is it buying it from somebody else? If it's somebody else's work, then what's the church doing buying work doesn't belong to itself? That'll show you how involved he gets on this. Brother Carl, you didn't answer these questions. May the church take from its treasury funds to provide orphan children too young to obey the gospel, such items as toys, dolls, bats and balls, checkers, marbles, swings, and so on. I introduce this to show you that Brother Cogdell does not believe that the church can supply those needs for orphan children. Yet he takes the position that the church can supply every need of a destitute child. He took that position in debates in the past, or at least in articles, and in the debate with me in Birmingham. But he's changed his position on that question since that debate. Now then, he doesn't believe that the church can help a person who is not a Christian. Brother Cogdell believes it's all right for the church to pay a preacher and let the preacher turn around and buy toys for the preacher's children. But the church can't take money out of its treasury and buy toys for an orphan child. That's sinful. You can spend $5 to feed the grass on the preacher's lawn, but you can't buy 25 cents worth of milk to feed an orphan baby, according to these fellows, out of the church treasury. You can't do it. You can provide a drinking fountain back there in the back for people that don't need a drinking fountain. You can provide a bed in the nursery, according to these fellows, for a baby that's got a bed at home. But if the baby didn't have any bed at home, the church couldn't supply it. I know their argument. I know they say, oh, that's not in the field of benevolence. They make a dodge on that. They say, why, don't you know that providing water in the drinking fountain and a bed in the nursery, that that's just for convenience? You can provide a bed for a baby for convenience sake that doesn't need one, but you can't provide a bed for a baby that doesn't have one. That's what this fellow believes, and that's what he's defending here, and that's what this church here stands for. And you might as well know it. Now, he's not going to dodge that issue. That's when he's going to debate. Because that's their position, and you'll not forget it, friends. You'll not forget it. Now, he says, well, the Woods doesn't know what the home is. I told you in the very outset. I don't know what these brethren would do if they couldn't get up and say, well, you quibble about the home. I told him that I accepted his definition of it. If there's any quibbling about it, any confusion, he's the fellow who produced it. And I'm going to show you what Brother Cogdell has said about the home. In our debate in Birmingham, page 90, and this is his publication of it, he says, they, that is the elders, can oversee the care. And when they place a child in a private home, a destitute child, with the agreement that they will pay that home to take care of that child. The child is still under control of the elders of the church. Pay a home. You pay a house. Pay a house, Cogdell. Pay a house. I'm using the word home in exactly that sense. That's what I mean by it. Let me give you some information. Here's what Webster says about it. The social unit or center formed by family living together. Winston's Dictionary for Schools. Unit of society formed by family living together. That's what I mean by home. By the word household, Webster says, those who dwell as a family under one roof. The word Hebrew, bayith, and the Greek, archaea, from archos, house, by metonymy, for household or family. Now, there are instances of this use in the Bible. Luke 10 and 5, peace be to this house, not to the frame building. Luke 11, 17, house divided against itself falleth. That doesn't mean that the ceiling is pulling away from the walls. Doesn't mean that. I look at the etymology of it. House, from an early term, meaning to hide, to seek seclusion and privacy. Then by metonymy, it came to be used in the sense of a family. God sometimes uses the word house in the sense of family. Genesis 12 and 17, the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house. Not the building. There wasn't any plague on the building. It was on the house, on the family. Now that sets it out clearly, and anybody that wants to see can see that. Well, we go further here. He says the church ought not to include recreation and entertainment in his program. Says, Woods, do you want to debate that proposition? No, I think the church can't do that. I think it's not the function of the church to engage in such. But the point I'm making is that Coghlan's position logically leads him to that because he says the church can perform every need of an orphan child. I want you to listen to this. This is our debate in Birmingham, page 23. There isn't anything necessary in caring for the destitute for whom God has charged the church to care that the church as such cannot furnish. The Bible teaches the church is responsible for doing such work. The organization that God gave the church, and the only one that God ever gave, the local congregation, should do the work, making all necessary provisions itself and exercising the control and oversight of the work. Now listen, there is not one thing essential to such a program relieving the destitute that cannot be provided by the congregation under the oversight of its elders. All right, one of the needs of an orphan child is to be taught, to be entertained, to be raised. He says the church can't do that, yet he says the church is the only organization that God has that can do it. No wonder he doesn't want to debate the question of who the church is obligated to care for. I'm not surprised. But Brother Coghlan, you'll debate it whether you like it or not. You wait and see. Now he says Galatians 6 and 10 is not the church. Does not refer to it. Here's what he's forced to do on that. He's forced to take the position that the Lord, in a book that was addressed to the churches of Galatia, gave instruction that it would be sinful for the church to engage in. Now, that's what it amounts to. It'd be sinful for the church to do what the Lord told the churches to do. Oh, but he'll say, yes, but that's individual there. If it is, then in the sixth verse, when he said, let him that's taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth, that means that you've got to give privately. But that means you've got to give privately every time you've been communicated to. Well, every time you sit in an audience where you receive an edification, if you don't obey that, you're sinning. If you don't go around and give the preacher some money. Now, Coghlan, deal with that when you get up here. He said, Coghlan does not believe that children are wards of the church. Now you say, I categorically deny that. He said, that's just not true. Now, Mother Coghlan, I have no disposition to accuse you of something that's not true. I'm just as anxious for you to be right on this as you are. But I want you to listen to what this says here now. He says that I'm wrong when I say that Coghlan believes that children become wards of the church. You listen to this. They can oversee the care, that is the elders. And when they place a child in a private home, a destitute child, with the agreement that they will pay that home to take care of that child, the child is still under the control of the elders of the church. And if it isn't properly cared for, they can take it out of that home and put it somewhere where it can be cared for. But they don't have that kind of oversight in the kind of home you're talking about. I want to know if elders have got that much control whether the children are wards of them or not. Are we going to quibble over what the word wards mean? Now, Brother Coghlan, you're getting on mighty thin ice on that deal right there. You're saying here that you support this arrangement because the children are in the control of the elders. And you take the position that you don't believe that children are wards. Now, you don't now. Why didn't you say you didn't tonight? You did in Birmingham. You don't tonight. I know you don't because you've taken the position since then that the church can't help anybody except saints. That's the position that he holds now. No wonder he doesn't want to debate. Now, further here. Let's have his chart number 11A. The one that's entitled Bible Position. Be sure to let me know when I have about 5 minutes, please.
All of us together will manage it. I'm sure I've several here to go over at once. It's way down there. Let's get through. Roll my hand.
card will cause our attention here to this fact, and it's exactly right. I have not questioned this because it's the very argument that I make. I'm surprised that he makes it because he surrenders his contention right here, as I'm going to show you. He points out to you that a sister in 1 Timothy 5 and 16 is obligated to her destitute mother. That's exactly right. 1 Timothy 5 and 16. She is to provide for her mother that the church be not charged, that it, the church, may care for them that are widows indeed. Now, what do we have here? We have a sister. What does this sister have? She has an obligation. What is her obligation? To relieve the widow. Where does she relieve that widow? In a church? Or is it in a family relationship? Or the next best thing? Where is it that she's relieved? Now, Brother Carville came along and says that the church is to provide that which the sister would provide if there isn't any sister. That's what I say. But that isn't a church. The daughter doesn't provide a church for a mother. She provides a home, a family relationship. That's exactly what I'm arguing. I wonder why he'd bring up a thing of that kind. I can't see his point on that. Oh, he says, now I'm going to show you the difference, though. He says, in the first place, well, one other point, though, before we get to this. He points out now that the church can do everything that the sister can do. That is, the word, same word is used. Whatever this word relieve means, in the case of the sister, it means it in the case of the church. Could the sister provide her mother with a television set? Huh? What about it, Brother Cogdell? What about it? If so, then the church can do it, or else his argument isn't any good. Now, he's taking the position that the church can't supply. What is it? Now, I'm very glad to answer it all, but then... All right, now, get this, friends. Brother Cogdell is taking the position that the church cannot, under any circumstance, supply anybody in need with any form of entertainment. That's not the function of the church to engage in entertainment. I don't think it is. I think that the church can supply a needy family with shoes which the boys could get out and play baseball in. I think that in that sense it could. But I don't think it's the function of the church itself to serve as an entertainment agency. But he's taken the position here that whatever the sister does, the church can do. All right, then the church can provide this woman with a television set. Now he says, if that be true... He says, if that be true, then, well, let's have that other chart, the one in loco parentis. In fact, I'd be mighty glad if these brethren learn how to use that Latin phrase, in loco parentis. It's not en, it's in. The cardinal knows that. What you got on the chart this way for? Now, he's not an ignoramus, and I'm not suggesting that he doesn't know how to spell that. But then, they got it in their book that way, and it's caused me some... So one fellow wrote an article in The Guardian on the basis of the use of that misspelled phrase here in the book. Besides that, my name is W-O-O-D-S. The apostrophe should be after the S. That's thrown in for good measure, Brother Carter. All right, now. Let me show you here. He has taken the position here that if you can restore the child's home, then everything that's involved in the widow's original home could be restored. Now then, there's some things that a person doesn't have to have in order to exist. It isn't the obligation of the church, and in no instance does the New Testament authorize the church to supply a widow with a husband. Not at all. But it does authorize somebody to visit the fatherless and the widow in their affliction. Well, a person is not exactly afflicted who is without a husband. Some of them think they are because they got one. Now, Mother Cogdell, you know, you knew that, and that there's not any point in bringing that up. That doesn't mean it at all. I want to get one thing straight here, though, and I assume that you misunderstood me. It's very true, friends, that a child's home that's been lost can be reestablished. That's very true. It's very true that a widow's home can be established, but that doesn't mean that their needs are the same. In some respects, they are. But now he said that I had taken the position here that it's not a question of authority in the matter of whether a church could build and maintain other organizations. Now, I assume that Brother Caudle just didn't get what I said about that. I don't see how he could have missed it. But at any rate, here is what I meant. I believe that it's just as much of an authority as he does. Now, don't you quote me anymore as saying that it's not a question of authority as to what the church must do. The church can't do anything without scriptural authority. I said it wasn't an argument over authority because we both believe the scriptures authorize. That's what I said. Is it possible that anybody here except Brother Caudle missed that? But if you did, you won't anymore. You won't anymore, surely. Of course there is authority. The authority dates back to the Garden of Eden when God ordained that people shall have a home. And a child is entitled to a home as much as you are. But these fellows say you can't restore the home without raising the mother from the dead. Very idea. We'll deal with that more later. Well, all right, further. He says, who ever heard of a family having a president, a vice president, a secretary, and treasurer? Well, who ever heard of a church in the New Testament having a building? Of trustees. Brother Caudle knows that these are legal provisions. He also knows that the statutes, and he mentioned legal statutes, the statutes of the state of Texas, and I would be glad to produce him the reference if he wants them, provides that there must be a sharp distinction between the legal, that is, the spiritual, and the temporal affairs of a congregation. He's familiar with that statute. And, of course, there are certain laws that must be known. We read of nothing in the Bible about any church ever owning a piece of property. We read nothing about trustees. We believe they're scriptural. We believe that they're authorized under the general, generic authorization of complying with the law of the land. Chart number 9, let's have that. He put in some time telling us here that the Gospel Guardian is a business organization, but it's a non-profit affair. Well, I'm sure he'd be glad if it could be a profit affair. I'm sure he's in favor of it. And that had nothing to do with the question that I brought up. I didn't bring it up to discuss whether it was a profit or non-profit affair. I brought it up to show one thing. Brother Caudle argued that the orphan homes are wrong because they are other organizations. I brought it up to show they must decide what's wrong about them. He can't say it's another organization because he's got one like them. If he says it's a matter of support, then it's not the organization. But they argue it's wrong on the basis of organization. He must make up his mind. Well, that's the reason that I brought that up.
About 7.5.
All right, thank you. Now, he says this corporate body does the work of the church. Well, now, one of two things is true. Either the Gospel Guardian does the work of the church, or it doesn't. Either it does or it doesn't. One or the other. He took a position in the Birmingham debate that it didn't do the work of the church, that there's nothing in it that has to do with the work of the church. And I believe that. Who can? The masthead of it says that it's devoted to the propagation and defense of Christianity, which sounds suspiciously to me like an effort to try to do something for the church. But now if he says that it's not doing the work of the church, then why would churches want to buy service from it? I know a congregation that bought $900 worth of it in 1 year and put it in a budget at that. Yeah, it's in the budget. $900. $600, maybe. Several hundred dollars. $900, good. You'd been glad if it had been $1,000, wouldn't you?
Yes, sir.
Good. And you'd be glad if all these churches had put it in the budget that way, wouldn't you?
Yes, sir.
Oh, good. We're getting somewhere. Now then, would you be glad if they'd put the orphan homes in the budget, too?
To buy service?
Yeah, to buy service.
Non-related?
Well, I'm Brother Caudle. Listen. Well, I maintain that their bill just like yours was,
well,
in the same sense. Huh?
I deny.
Well, then that's what we're debating about. Let's go on debating. All right. Now you see, friends, the issue boils down to this. What's Brother Caudle going to base his objections on? He can't get not on organization because he's got one just like it. Not on the manner in which he gets his money, because he admits that he wishes all the churches would
put it in the budget in the same fashion. Oh, he talks about it buying service, but that's, thank you, that's dodging the thing a little bit, because what on earth is the church buying something from a thing that's not doing its work? He said the Guardian doesn't do the work of the church in the Birmingham debate. Well, all right, what's the church buying service from? It's buying something it doesn't need. But if it does, on the other hand, need this work, then it's because it's doing something that the church needs. Well, it's another organization. Now, if you can buy service from the from the Guardian, why can't you buy service from the orphan home? Well, Brother Cogg will have a good bit of difficulty in answering that. He said, yes, we're organized under the same statute. But he said, we had to do it. We did it according to the law. Suppose the Lord said you must designate yourself as a missionary society. Would he have done that? No, he wouldn't have done that. He wouldn't have agreed to do that. That shows he'd make a distinction between the two. Suppose the Lord required him to do something that was wrong. He told us a while ago we mustn't do that, and I agree with him. But he didn't think it was wrong to organize it under the same statute that the orphan home is. So it's not the organization that makes it wrong. So quit arguing that it is. Just have the candor, Brother Cogdell, to quit arguing that it's the organization. We've shown you that he has given that up tonight. Now, you remember, friends, and all of you remember that Roy Cogdell has tonight given up the idea that there's something wrong with the orphan homes because they're organized improperly. It's not another organization that makes it wrong. It's not the fact that he gets money out of the church treasury either, because he'd like to have every church in the country in their budget. Said so tonight here. Well, now that covers his speech. Item by item, statement by statement. I want to, in the closing moments now, to show you exactly what we're arguing here. And just a moment here until I get a chart before you that I'm anxious for you to see tonight. We'll have, let me see, I want chart number 4. I have introduced this in every debate that I've held, and I'll do so from here on, because it sets out plainly and clearly what our position is on this matter. May we have the lights out, please? Thank you. The church and the home move on parallel lines. Let this represent the home that every child has, and I'm not talking about the building. I merely use the building as a symbol for the family relationship that's there, just as a pictorial arrangement. I trust that you can recognize that fact. And let this represent the broken home, and I do not mean by that just the house torn up. I'm using the word, house there, or home, in the sense of the family relationship. There are many reasons why homes are destroyed. Death, disease, desertion, divorce, delinquency, many reasons. Well, then sometimes there are people with sufficient of the milk of human kindness in them to want to provide homeless children with a home. Then the home is restored. Replace. That is, it is, the child is again placed into a family relationship. It is proper and right for a child to have a home. It's proper and right to have legalized control of. We must have. Now, what is the orphan home? It's the home the child had, lost, and has been restored. It had a right to a home to begin with, has a right to home to end with. How much time do I have? Well, all right, let's see if I can't get this constituent argument in by Brother Cogdell, chart number 1Z. Now, Brother Cogdell has taken the same position that I have been defending here in his statements. I want you to see here this, if we have time. If we don't, we'll finish up with it tomorrow night. Now, you get this, friends, because this is the issue here. Now, look, Brother Cogdell has these constituent elements. In the debate, page 90, he says the church can provide for destitute children. In debate, page 90, he says the church can use another organization. In the debate, page 90, he says the other organization is a home. That is, he calls it that. He admits on page 107 that the home must be licensed. He admits that elders can't oversee it as elders. He says that that's Catholicism. Now then, look at the argument. The sum of thy word is truth. Psalms 119, verse 160. Brother Beaver, can we raise it any? Can we get it up any higher? So that we can get the argument, the conclusion of it here now. All right, now that's fine. Let's get it focused. Now look, here is the statement. The sum of thy word is truth. Psalms 119, 160. Essentials to these items are scriptural. That's axiomatic. Now what are the points? A home license. A home license apart from the church. Licensed home supported by the church. Providing care for destitute children. Now watch the argument. All complete situations, the component parts of which are scriptural situations. The complete situation involved in operating a license home apart from the church but supported by it for destitute children is a complete situation, the component parts of which are scriptural. Therefore, the complete situation involved in operating a license home apart from the church but supported by it for destitute children is a complete situation which is scriptural. Brother Condo admits, let me finish the argument. The Brother Cogdell admits the minor premise, the major premise is axiomatic. Therefore, the conclusion irresistibly follows. I thank you.